This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Extra Point with knowledgeable analysts and exclusive special guests. It's your look at the world of sports through the eyes of Place to Be Nation. And now your hosts, Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, George Ribellino.
Place to Be Nation. We're back, and always better than ever. Welcome to episode 34 of the best sports show on the internet, Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I'm your co-host, Scott Criscolo. We got a fun show for you tonight. Let me bring in my compadre, fresh from visiting one of the cathedrals of professional sports, if you will, the doctor, Dr. G. George Ribellino. Good evening, doctor. How are you?
Good evening. How's everything going?
Well, you and I today... Your daughter was on our winter break, so we took little doctor to up to Springfield today to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. And you and I have been there, what, six or seven times?
Yeah, it's a great place. And, you know, we're number 34 today, so for basketball, I guess we could say Shaq.
Shaquille O'Neal, at least when he was with the Lakers, Shaq, and maybe Charles Barkley. Also 34.
We could say for football, Walter Payton.
That's right, Walter Payton. Herschel Walker. I don't know
baseball,
about
baseball. We could say Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan.
Kirby Puckett.
Kirby Puckett. Yep. Did Roy Halladay wear 34? I think he did. Maybe he didn't. But
for basketball, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Hakeem the Dream. Yep. So plenty of great 34s in sports history, and that is the episode we have today. But yeah, if you're in the New England area, if you're visiting or you live close by and you haven't been there, it's right off I-91. It's like exit 6. You're literally like spitting into, and if you're in Connecticut, you're literally spitting into Massachusetts. Very, very close. Tremendous venue. I highly recommend it. It's a fun place to look at the history of basketball.
And I wanted to do the slam dunking. They have like all the different, hoop sizes, you know, for the kids.
Yeah. Well, we didn't want to get
carried
out.
I can't do the regular size, but like the level down below it, I wanted to do some slam dunking today.
Well, I didn't want it to be like, you know, when you fell at the Garden at the 2000 Rumble and you would have been like the Dr. G basketball Hall of Fame. But would have had you carried out, but that's okay. So, yeah, we did that today, and that was a lot of fun. So if you live in the New England area, you're visiting, exit 6 off I-91 in Springfield, Mass., go to the James Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. The thing about that Hall of Fame is compared to others, and you and I had this conversation on the ride home. Like, if you've been to Cooperstown, which is another fantastic place to visit, highly recommend it. Definitely go to the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
It's a tremendous
venue. It is predominantly Major League Baseball. You get a little bit of Negro Leagues and some of the like the Federal League and some of the older leagues, and you know, there's a section on like the Women's League, like the movie A League of Their Own, that history. But predominantly, it's Major League Baseball. The Basketball Hall of Fame is mostly college. Is a lot of NBA, but it's also international. It's college basketball, women's basketball. So there's coaches, college coaches, pro coaches. You know, a lot of. And I was looking through the and there's a lot of inductees. And among the inductees in this class coming up this year. The 2014 class that was this past year was Alonzo Mourning was there, Mitch Richmond.
Zoe.
Yep, Zoe. Mitch Richmond, Sarunas Marshallonis. Who the hell else was in it? Nolan Richardson, used to coach Arkansas, 40 Minutes of Hell. I can't remember who else was in the class. Somebody named Leonard was a coach. Anyway, that was this past class. And I'm looking around and I thought to myself, you know, I'm looking through all these, and you could go to the website. I think it's basketballhalloffame.com, and you could look at all the inductees. The one guy that really rankled me that didn't belong there, in my opinion, was Phil Knight. I'm sorry. Yes, I know that, you know, Michael and Nike and everything, but Phil Knight, I mean, come on. Seriously?
Yeah, I don't know if necessarily.
I mean, if you're going to do that, then the guy that owns Converse, I mean, look at that run they had in the 80s, pre-Michael. The Converse Weapon is probably one of the most legendary sneaker in the 1980s. Everybody wore weapons. Bird, Magic, Isaiah, Bernard King, Barkley. Who else? Mark Aguirre. That was a hot... Before Air Jordan became the nouveau riche sneaker in the NBA, the Converse Weapon was the sneaker.
I know. You got a little rankle today.
I did. But then there's other... But again, I mean, that's... There's very few.
It was cool. I got to do a little newscast.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
They have like a guy that has a camera, and then they have the teleprompter, and you could sit at a desk. And too bad they didn't let you even for a couple of bucks purchase a recording of it. But it was. But anyway, it was kind of cool, and they play it back for you. Mm. It's literally like 30 seconds or 45 seconds, something like that. But
right.
So it was fun. It was a good time.
Yeah, no, it was a good time. So if you live around this area, if you live in the New England area, you're visiting, head up to Springfield, Mass. Exit 6, right off I-91, to the basketball.
When it's not snowing,
They're closed normally in the wintertime. They're closed Mondays and Tuesdays. We're recording on Tuesday night, but because it was a lot of schools have off this week, they opened those days for the kids. It's a fantastic place. Of course, the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Football Hall of Fame is obviously in Canton, Ohio. You would probably want to do like a trip to Cleveland. Cleveland's about 60 miles north of Canton. So you probably could do a weekend trip, rent a car. If you're driving out there, you have your car. Maybe check out, depending on the time of the year, go to an Indians game or maybe even a Browns preseason game if you're going in August.
Go to the Rock and Roll Hall
of Fame. Go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and then head up down 60 miles south to Canton to the Football Hall of Fame. I've never been there. The Hockey Hall of Fame's in Toronto. And I think that's the big four. If you care about tennis, that Hall of Fame's in Newport, Rhode Island. I think the Golf Hall of Fame is in somewhere in Florida, probably. Anyway, welcome to the show. Coming up in our second segment, we'll be joined by our man Grant Hughes from Bleacher Report. We'll talk about the first half of the NBA season. It was the All-Star break this past weekend. The West won in a typical NBA All-Star game shootout. A record number of points scored at the Garden on Sunday night, 163-158, the final. Russell Westbrook had 41 points for the West for the MVP award. So we'll talk to Grant about the first half and look ahead to the second half. Obviously, people seem to be zeroing in on Warriors-Hawks in the NBA Finals, both teams playing ridiculously well. We'll see if that holds up. So we'll talk to Grant in the second hour. This segment, Dr. G, I wanted to talk about a couple things with you. Of course, the big news story today, as we are getting close to the start of Major League Baseball, pitchers and catchers report in a few days, and stay here to the Extra Point. The month of March, we will have our second annual MLB preview. We'll be joined by our man, Joel Barnhart, and we'll go through the 2015 Major League season. So stay tuned for that coming up in late March, right before the start of the season. But there's a couple of news stories that we need to talk about. Of course, today, you knew that, an off-season was not going to go smoothly without another story of Alex Rodriguez. Of course, it also was in the news today, Dr. G, that Anthony Bosch, the guy who ran Biogenesis down in Florida, sentenced to 4 years in a federal pokey.
Yeah, and he thought he was maybe going to get less due to him, helping with the investigation. They still think maybe he might get, some time shaved off. But, it's one of those black eyes you kind of want to make go away.
If precisely.
You're Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
It's about time, get that over with, move on from that. And now... probably what you're going to go into next is Alex Rodriguez making that written apology today. Mm-hmm. To the fans, to the Yankees, and to Major League Baseball. I know the Yankees had offered him if he wanted to use Yankee Stadium for a press conference. And many people are saying, well, was this the right thing to do? Instead of doing a press conference, just write a letter and, just go ahead and, get this thing going in spring training. I'm kind of glad maybe you didn't do a press conference. Just get it over with. Do your little letter, move on. Mm-hmm. How sincere he is about it,
Well, it's A-Rod. You never know what it was. Anyway, before we talk more about A-Rod, let's get the full background on Bosch here. He choked back tears, and a court said the clinic was a legitimate business gone awry, sought a more lenient term because of his cooperation in the investigation, but U.S. District Judge Darren Gales refused. He also received 3 years of supervised release. Prosecutors said Bosch could get his sentence reduced through further cooperation, including potential trial testimony. Gales said Bosch falsely held himself out as a licensed medical doctor at his Biogenesis of America clinic, where he accepted thousands of dollars a month to provide steroid injections to such stars as, of course, A-Rod and Ryan Braun. Most troubling, Gale said, was Bosch's injections of high school players in the Miami area. That's not good. That's worse than the... Bosch, 51, pleaded guilty in October to conspiracy to distribute testosterone, the sixth person charged in the Biogenesis case to do so. Bosch said Bosch and Rodriguez are expected to testify if the last two defendants, Rodriguez's cousin Yuri Scoot-Suit-Cart, is that the same cousin he sold up the river a few years ago? Is that the same guy?
Yeah, I think so.
And ex-University of Miami pitching coach Lazaro Collazo going to trial is scheduled in early April. Of course, A-Rod, the full year that he took off last year. 39 years old. I didn't realize he was so old. So he said he wrote a handwritten letter. Let me see if I have the full letter. Let's see. Is it right here? Let's see. Let's see if the full letter. I want to see if the full letter.
Yeah. He did write a handwritten letter.
Yeah. Here's the quote. Here's one quote from the letter. I accept the fact that many of you will not believe my apology or anything that I say at this point. I understand why, and that's on me. It was gracious of the Yankees to offer me the use of Yankee Stadium for this apology, but I had decided the next time I am in Yankee Stadium, I should be in pinstripes doing my job. What do you think of this whole thing?
Listen, the guy's a phony. We know he's a phony. You know, he's not a stupid person. He knows he's under a lot of criticism. He's trying to make things a little bit easier for himself, but you know, this is fine and dandy and what you're doing here, but he's got to go around to all his, you know, not only his teammates but players around the league and apologize to them, because this just keeps casting that negative light, all this stuff that he has done. How sincere he is, I don't know. You know, I know the Yankees really would love to have this go away, but listen, you know, and I said this before, I may be a Yankees fan and I may be a homer at times, but you know what? They put themselves in this situation. They re-signed him for that 10-year contract. Now they're stuck with it and they gotta pay the price for it. And, you know, I know they're trying to not have to pay the bonus money based on all the milestones that he'll reach, you know, but that's what you signed him to. I don't have a problem with them trying to fight it, but I don't know. Some people say they have a good case. The Yankees have a good case. But I don't know. That Major League Baseball union is just so strong.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see them winning that. But, you know, basically they're going to see what happens. They're going to let them come to spring training. And probably the best scenario for them, not that you want to wish any harm on anybody, is that he has some kind of major injury or because of his past injuries, he just can't go at it like he used to. And then they collect the insurance money. That would probably be the best scenario for the Yankees brass. But, you know, it looks like, you know, on paper, he looks like he wants to come in with that attitude, like he's got to win a job. I know he's reached out to Chase Headley to not make it awkward. But we'll see. We'll see if that circus atmosphere is there or not. Because, honestly, Scott, there's really nothing in that Yankees camp to distract. You know, Tanaka now is in his second year. That's a little bit of a big story because of his elbow injury, but you know, it's not like last year where it was this, oh, the big Japanese phenom coming in. You have no Derek Jeter to deflect, or you know, they really just, you know, it's probably going to be centered a lot on him, so he's going to be a distraction, and it's just it'll just see how the team itself will be able to cope with this, especially that amongst probably a lot of guys in that locker room, he's not very well liked. They put up with him.
Yeah, I mean, what if he 300 at-bats, you know, hits 280, 20 homers, 95 ribbies, something like that. He's not going to have, you know, 2007 AL MVP numbers because you guys aren't going to give him enough at-bats, I don't think. But what do you think?
He's going to be the full-time DH. I don't think he has the – you know, you got hips that have issues. I don't know if he's going to be able to play the field on an everyday basis. I think the Yankees signed Chase Utley to a four-year contract to man down third base. It's going to be very interesting. Joe Girardi is going to have one of his biggest managing jobs this year. So far he showed that he could handle all these different distractions. But, you know, here you go. Here's the Yankees not making the playoffs now the last two seasons. First time since the early 90s. You know, there's a lot of different pressures. It's going to be a very interesting baseball season in New York. Whereas I think, you know, for you as a Mets fan, and the Mets have some, I think Mets fans have a little bit higher expectations based on the really good pitching of the Mets this year. I think Yankee fans are kind of like, they don't know what to think. And I think you're going to see it when you don't see the crowds at Yankee Stadium like we're used to seeing.
Right. We'll get into that. We'll get into the meat and potatoes of the team when we have Joel on for our preview. A-Rod is the subject of an ESPN The Magazine story written by J.R. Moehringer. It'll be released tomorrow, as a matter of fact. He talks with A-Rod about his PED use and everything. Among the items he talked to Moehringer about, A-Rod believes what Anthony Bosch gave him might have been a placebo. Quote, only me, he said of his relationship with Bosch, only a dope like me would do that stuff and have the two worst statistical seasons of my career. Bosch was sentenced to 4 years in jail, blah, blah, blah. I mean, think about it. Why did he even bother? The guy was like the Undertaker of baseball. He was the phenom. Why bother? He was a beast, to use, you know, the Rhode Island, Massachusetts, you know, phraseology. He was a beast. Why bother? I think that's what pisses people off more than anything else. I think that's what pisses people off about Barry Bonds. Why bother? Did you really need it that bad? I think that's what irks people the most.
It's ego.
You know, guys like Ken Caminiti, God rest his soul, who was a good hitter, but not a great hitter. He helped himself to a little taste and ended up winning the NL MVP in 1996. And then he died.
Yeah, well, in the end, it...
You know? But this guy was the phenom. They were praying that this guy was clean because he could have easily beaten Barry Bonds' home run record, and then we would never have to deal with that crap ever again.
Yeah, you know? I mean, trust me. Listen, this. Why do you think the Yankees, signed him to these contract? You know, to the contract and everything. Listen. As much as I can't stand them, yes, ratings went up when the Yankees got him. Some of the attendance was doing pretty well when the Yankees got him because, again, they were hoping this was going to be the guy to erase Barry Bonds. They were excited. Oh, my gosh, he's going to hit his 500th home run as a Yankee. He's going to hit his 600th home run as a Yankee, possibly his 7th or 800th home run as a Yankee. This was, like, big to have and also to get the record back. Home run record back in pinstripes. I mean, this was the guy. This was what they were banking on. This is what Major League Baseball was banking on. Mm. And the guy wound up just being a total phony fraud.
He considered retirement early last season while sitting out. He's been in therapy, and Moehringer called his therapist one of two people in the world who know something close to the whole story. This one makes me laugh the most. Ready for this? Rodriguez sought the counsel of and spent time with somebody whom he regards as a hitting scientist. Okay? A hitting scientist. Do you know who that guy was?
Who?
Barry Bonds.
Oh, right. Barry Bonds. A-Rod, you really want to get take the heat off of you, take the limelight, and you go and you hang
strange,
out. Barry
strange Bonds. Bedfellows.
I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. And, you know, I know David Ortiz is not happy with him, you know, and they were very friendly for many years.
Well, it's because Poppy's got a little skeleton in his closet. That pretty much three quarters of that 2004 World Series team, it has skeletons in their closet.
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, yeah, we could call out the Red Sox and all that. You know, Yankees have it in theirs. I mean, all these championship teams, you know, in the last 10, 15
years. I wish the Mets had some PED guys. It would give an excuse for our suctitude. ours is just that we have a shitty front office. What?
You sound like Christian and Edge. You come up with your own vocabulary.
Kazoo's rule. So does mac and cheese. Mac and cheese rules, too. All right. So, you know, A-Rod's going to be in the Bronx. You'll be watching him.
Yeah, can't wait.
So there you go. Opening day for the Bombers, April 6th. Let's see. March 20th. You're going to laugh. All right. March 29th is WrestleMania, and that's a Sunday. So 30th. So is March 30th? No, it would be later on in the year. I think April 5th is that Sunday night game. I think it's Cubs-Cardinals is the Sunday night game, and then Monday is opening day. And the Yankees are home. Of the two New York teams,
I know, usually I know this because I can't wait for, like, hopefully warm weather soon.
Well, why don't I click on your stupid ESPN?
You know, for those of you who are living in the Northeast or New England area, especially like Boston area or even parts of Rhode Island, they're getting slammed even worse than us. But I am just so done with this weather. Every day you're worried about snow. You're worried about it being, you know, 10 degrees outside. It's like, oh.
I'm opening day for you guys is Monday, April 6th at in the Bronx, 105 against the Blue Jays. And then you're the first home team for the New York teams. The Mets open their homes. I mean, they open the year on the road. Their first home game, I think, is the following Monday, the 13th. They play the Phillies at Citi Field. Anyway, we'll talk more about the meat and potatoes of baseball in about a month.
Can't wait to get my man Joel on.
Joel Barnhart will join us, and we will have our second annual MLB preview special. The other thing I wanted to talk about, Dr. G, that the story involves the Yankees, but it opens up a broader question. And I actually opened it up on Twitter today. And follow us on Twitter, of course, at P2BExtraPoint. And, of course, email us, extrapoint@placetobenation.com. I wanted to know people's opinions about number retirements. By the way, good news for you Hoya fans like myself. Georgetown with a 22-point win tonight over St. John, 79-57. For you Yankee fans, to kind of skew yourself off of the A-Rod nonsense, three numbers being retired this year. Three. Holy shit. Andy Pettit, his number 46 will be retired. Bernie Williams, Bernabe, Burn Baby Burn, Disco Inferno, number 51 will be retired. And Jorge Posada, Georgie juiced one, although there's no evidence he juiced anything. Maybe if he did, he'd deserve this. His number 20 is going into Monument Park. That would give the Yankees 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, 15, 23 numbers retired. 23 numbers retired. Billy Martin, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Mickey Mantle, Joe Torre, Joe DiMaggio. Wait, let me do that again.
You forgot Joe DiMaggio.
Billy Martin, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio, Joe Torre, Mickey Mantle, two number eights, Bill Dickey, Yogi Berra, Roger Maris, Phil Rizzuto, Thurman Munson, Whitey Ford, Don Mattingly, Elston Howard, Casey Stengel, Jackie Robinson. So he doesn't really count. But everybody has 42 retired, so we'll make it 22 numbers then. Mariano Rivera, Reggie Jackson, and Ron Guidry. All right, I accept Andy Pettit. Andy Pettit was the catfish hunter of the new dynasty. The guy was a workhorse. There's a guy's number. Yeah, Andy Pettit's number's retired. Why isn't Catfish Hunter's number retired?
I have to be honest with you. You had mentioned that actually, Jason Greenhouse actually, either tweeted it out or whatever, and you said to me, and I have to be honest with you, I was actually in the beginning kind of surprised. And the reason why I was surprised was not that Andy isn't 100% deserving of having his number retired, but because of the HGH situation, which we know he got out in front of, and, you know, he's a likable guy, I just thought maybe with the whole A-Rod stuff that maybe the Yankees would stay away from that, maybe wouldn't do it this year. Maybe they'd wait some time for that. So I guess I was kind of surprised about Andy. Mm-hmm. You know, because the first thing I said, well, what about Bernie? I mean, it's about time. I think Bernie really deserves his due, because I think Bernie definitely, you know, a great Yankee, not only regular season Yankee, but a great Yankee, has a lot of records in the postseason and really was a big part of those championship teams. So I had no problem with that. Now, then you go to Jorge Posada. You're going to hear a lot of different things. If you wanted to argue with me, or if there was one, I would say, yeah, you know what? I think maybe, you know, if you wanted to maybe even do a plaque for him and leave it alone. I know they're doing a plaque for Willie Randolph as well.
Yeah, they're not retiring his number. They're just giving him a plaque.
Right. I don't know why they're doing it all in 1 year, but anyway.
I know why. You answered your own question earlier.
Well,
they want to get asses in the seats because, you know.
I think that's part of it, but I mean.
The number two Camelot is over. That's why.
Number 20, Jorge, I don't know. I don't know if he's deserving of having his number retired. I have to be honest. I'm not, you know, he had, what did we say, how many home runs he had? 275 home runs, which isn't too shabby for a catcher. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are not bad numbers. But right. Beginning of his career, he wasn't a full-time player. You know, I think he was good with his pitchers, even though he was very fiery as a catcher. Kind of like Piazza. I think he was a good game caller, just wasn't a great defender. I mean, if you wanted to have a somewhat of a knock on him there,
mm-hmm.
But very well respected in the clubhouse, was more of the vocal leader in the clubhouse, where Jeter was more of like lead by example, or I'm going to take you aside and I'll do my thing. You
rough
know,
you
when it feels right. What's that?
Rough you up.
Yeah. You know, that right. kind of thing. So I don't know. I guess that's the one I guess I would argue with. I mean, I have no problems with Andy. Maybe they could have waited a little bit on Andy, but definitely Bernie. And I don't know, Posada. I don't know if he's quite up.
Posada was a piece. I think I always thought that Posada was a part of the that was in the sum of those parts. But Andy Pettit was a workhorse. I mean, he was always there for you. 7 innings, 3 runs, 7 hits, 5, you know, maybe 4 walks, 8 strikeouts, and your team was in the game. He was a lot like Catfish.
I mean, he had some stinkers in the playoffs, but, you know, I mean, 2009, he was great. You know, 96, the one game against Atlanta, you know, like, he's had some really great starts. He's had some clunkers.
Yeah, well, the one clunker that sticks out is probably game 6. Of the 2001 World Series at the Bob, where you guys needed one win to wrap it up, and he gave up what, like fucking 11 runs in 2 innings or something against the Diamondbacks?
He's tipping his pitches. But so, again, I think the only thing I would say maybe is you could have waited a little bit just because of the, you know, the HGH situation, and you have A-Rod coming back. That kind of opens that can of worms. I guess Chuck Knobloch went on some kind of tirade about it on Twitter. With Pettit, I'm not sure why. I mean, he's also been kind of lumped in and all that. And I don't know what his issue is with Pettit and all this, or if he's upset that the Yankees maybe have shunned him. I don't know. I don't know what that situation was about.
Okay.
But, yeah, I you know, when it comes to number retiring, now, you know, there's the argument. There's some teams now, you're itching for the Mets to retire some numbers, which we were talking about it today earlier that we, you know, It's time, you know, retire Mike Piazza's number. I think, first of all, that might help his cause for the Hall of Fame. But are the Mets that afraid that do they know something, or do they really think that, oh, my gosh, they're going to put his name on the wall and then something about PED use is going to come out?
I don't think that's going to happen. I just think they suck at life. I don't think there's any. This is the Mets front office we're talking about. But it's funny you bring that up, Dr. G, because, I posted the question to all our fans on Twitter. Their thoughts on their teams. Have their teams, in all the sports, all 4 sports, have their teams retired too many or not enough numbers in their history? JJF tweeted us saying, I like what the Toronto Maple Leafs do. They honor numbers and players, but don't take them out of circulation. They add guys. They let guys add to the number. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like what the Yankees had with number 8. They you know, Bill Dickey wore number 8, and then Yogi wore it, and they just retired it again. So that's an interesting philosophy. Now to counter or to compare, let's take a look at a team that's in a similar vein in terms of history for the Yankees, and that's the Montreal Canadiens. They've won 24 cups, which is all-time, three short of their number 2 all-time in North American sports championships behind your fucking team with their 27. And you like that? And your fucking team.
Your fucking team.
Let's see how many of their numbers are retired. I've never been to. We should have Aaron George on because him and his buddy Ivan, who I met Rumble Weekend, big Canadiens fan. Him and I had our friendly headbutting Canadiens Bruins. Of course, the Bruins are playing like shit right now. All right, they have 15 numbers retired. Jacques Plante, Doug Harvey, number 1, Jacques Plante, number 2, Doug Harvey, number 3, Emile Bouchard, two guys, number 4, Auriel Joliat. I'm going to butcher these fucking French names. He was a left winger from 22 to 38. And then one of my favorite French names that I love to say, my dad always liked saying his name too, Jean Béliveau, who passed away last year. His number was retired. They retired number 4 on the same day, October 9th, 1971. Two guys, number 5, are retired. Bernie Boom Boom Geoffrion and Guy Lapointe, both number 5s retired. Howie Morenz, center, retired, number 7. Number 9, of course, Maurice Rocket Richard, retired. Number 10, Guy Lafleur, retired. Two guys, number 12, Dickie Moore and Yvan Cornoyer, retired. Number 16 is retired. Two guys, Henri Richard, Maurice's brother, and Elmer Locke. Number 18, Serge Savard, retired. Number 19, Larry Robinson, retired. Number 23, Bob Gainey, retired. Number 29, Ken Dryden, goalie. And number 33, Patrick Waugh. So 15 numbers retired for the Canadians.
Really, up until recently with the Yankees, they've actually had just as much, if not more, than the Yankees up until recently, last years.
So there's okay. Now let's look at another team that is similar in. Let's look at the NBA version of the best team ever, and that is, of course, the Boston Celtics. How many numbers they have retired? Let's see. Retired numbers. Here we go. Let's see. Retired numbers. Here we go. They have 1, 2, 6, 12, 18, 19, 20, 21. They have 20. Let's see. 6,
wow.
11, 12, 17, 18, 19. 21 numbers and like 3 logos. Okay? The numbers. 00 for Robert Parrish. 1 for Walter Brown. 2 for Red Auerbach. He actually has two things retired. 2 for Red Auerbach. 3 for Dennis Johnson for DJ, 6 for Bill Russell, 10 for JoJo White, 14 for Bob Cousy, 15 Tommy Heinsohn, 16 Satch Sanders. Hey, boy, Satch! Satch Sanders. 17 Hondo, John Havlicek, 18 for Dave Cowens. Jim Luskatoff, I guess he didn't wear a number because they just have Losky, Losky on a banner. 19 for Don Nelson. I didn't know his number was retired. 21 for Bill Sharman. His number is actually retired by both the Lakers and the Celtics, I think. Ed McCauley, number 22. Frank Ramsey, 23. Sam Jones, 24. Casey Jones, 25. Cedric Maxwell, 31. Fucking asshole should know his number retired. Kevin McHale, 32. Larry Bird, 33. Reggie Lewis, 35. There's also a microphone for Johnny Most. And then there's a black shamrock with the word red. For Red Auerbach, worn by Celtics during the 2006-2007. That must have been the year he died. So they have a boatload of stuff. All told, they have 6, 12, 18. They have 24 things retired. So pretty close to the Yankees in that aspect. And you guys have, and the Yankees have, you know, the Bob Shepard plaque.
You know,
was there a plaque for Eddie Layton?
Yes, I believe so.
There's a plaque for Eddie Layton.
So, I mean, they have also, you're right, they do the plaques. Listen, I think what some Yankee fans that are complaining about is they think with the numbers being retired, those are like the immortals. I think, you know, they really want to celebrate this era. Again, you could argue and say, listen, out of the three, maybe Bernie is more deserved than the other two. But I don't have a problem with Pettit. I don't have a problem with Bernie because they have a lot of team records. You want to argue Posada, like you said, you know, is he up there with Thurman, with Yogi and Bill Dickey? No, definitely not. Maybe a plaque would have been fine, just like they're doing for Willie. I think Willie deserves a plaque. Do I think maybe number 30 should be retired? No, I wouldn't think of him as an immortal. I think he's, you know, obviously one of the best second basemen the Yankees ever had, but I don't think of him as an immortal.
Now, on the other side of the coin, now I'm going by teams that have won the
most championships. But then you think about it, like, I didn't know Don Nelson's number was retired.
I didn't either.
So,
but I mean, let's look at this. On the other side of the coin, now I'm picking teams who've won the most championships in all respective leagues. The team obviously with the most Super Bowl rings is the Steelers. That's Cowboy Senior's favorite team. He secretly has a Terry Bradshaw jersey next to his Tom Brady feety pajamas. But you know how many numbers they have retired? Now let's put it this way. They have 5, 10, 15, 21 people in their Pittsburgh Steelers Hall of Fame. You know how many numbers they have retired? 2. Ernie Stoutner's number was retired in 1964. Then 50 years, they went through a tradition of not retiring numbers. And then this past season, they retired Mean Joe Green's 75. And they've opened the possibility. Now, they do have numbers retired. They do have numbers that they have not given to anybody, but they're not technically retired. But I guess the team trainer or whatever is not allowed to issue them. Gary Anderson, number 1. Obviously, nobody's worn 12 since Terry Bradshaw. Nobody's worn 32 since Franco Harris. 36, Jerome Bettis. 52, no, Mike Webster.
Me, for all intents and purposes, why not retire the numbers?
See, that's a weird thing. I agree. Jack Lambert, 58. Jack Ham, 59. Dermoni Dawson, 63. And Hines Ward, 86. That is a weird thing. How do you not give 86 to anybody, but you'll pass out 82 for John Stallworth and 88 for Lynn Swann, two probably the greatest receivers in NFL history, and you pass, Louis Lips wore fucking 82, for Christ's sakes. But, you know, so that's weird that the Steelers don't do that.
You know, I guess it's up to each franchise. I mean, I guess the Yankees have, over the years, have made it very special because of their history, and now maybe some people feel like it's getting a little watered down. Maybe doing it so many all at once, maybe it does seem a little watered down. You know, it's tough. Then you see the Steelers. Well, if you're not going to issue those numbers, then retire the numbers then.
Right.
You know, give the honor to those players that they deserve. I mean, those are your immortals for your team.
Now, let's go to a team that's got just as much history but not as many numbers. The Boston Red Sox have had just as rich a history as the Yankees, obviously considerably less world championships. They only have – now, I'm not counting Jackie Robinson because everybody has his number retired, so he doesn't count. The Red Sox have only 7 numbers retired. Ted Williams, well-deserved.
Of course.
Joe Cronin, Bobby Doerr, Yaz, Carlton Fisk, Johnny Pesky, and Jim Rice.
I think that's...
I don't remember Jim Rice's number. July 28th, 2009, they retired. Now, again, while not officially retired, the Red Sox have not issued several numbers since the departure of prominent figures who wore them. Do you realize no one on the Red Sox has worn 21 since Clemens left? Isn't that weird?
I didn't realize that, especially...
No one's worn... he's only been retired for 3 years, but no one has worn 33 since Varitek left. No one's worn 45 since Pedro left. And no one's worn 49 since Wakefield left.
Well, I think if you were a Reds, thinking I think Pedro deserves his number retired.
Now here's
I think Wade Boggs deserves his number retired.
Oh, okay. Here's an interesting thing. The Red Sox have two official requirements for a player to have his number retired. He has to be in a Hall of Famer. He has to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. And he has to have played at least 10 years with the Red Sox.
Oh, wow.
So they have... let me read this. The Red Sox previously had a requirement that the player must have finished their career with the Red Sox, but this was reconsidered after Carlton Fisk. Fisk actually retired with the White Sox, obviously. White Sox, Dan Duquette hired him for one day as a special assistant, which allowed him to technically end his career. After that, with the anticipation there might be other former Red Sox players who would be denied the chance, the team dropped the rule. For instance, I'm surprised Wade Boggs' number is not retired. The guy won fucking, what, 8 batting titles? My father was not a Wade Boggs fan. He thought he was a banjo hitter. But I mean, he was a great hitter. He was. He was a lolly Pete Rose. Pete Rose was one of those guys who just slapped the ball all over the place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean.
So the point of this whole thing is, I guess, different teams have different regulations and.
I could see, you know, like I know your brother's upset about some of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some people that don't even think Joe Torre's number should be retired, but I think that's ridiculous because, as a manager, it just depends on, you know, it's a tough thing. I mean, like now the Red Sox have some rules that are out there. I don't think the Yankees really have any rules out there. I think, you know, George Steinbrenner's on the Yankees, you know, the Steinbrenner family's on the Yankees for a while, and this is what they think. You know, is there marketing and stuff involved in it? That's the way all sports are. I don't want to hear it just because it's the Yankees or because it's whatever, you know, the Lakers or whatever major team that does stuff like this. It's all about marketing. It's all about money. It's sports. This is what it's all about. You know what? Stop complaining or don't watch because this is what it's all about. There's going to be marketing that it's involved in it. And this is the way, you know, other revenue streams that teams make money. Again, I'll argue with you. I'll agree with most people if you say Posada doesn't deserve to be there. I don't have a problem. If he didn't get his number retired, I would have had no problem with it whatsoever. You know, you wanted to honor him maybe, you know, another five years from now with a plaque, I would have been fine with it.
Right. Now, another team that's been in history for the Major League history for quite a long time has 6 numbers retired. That's the Green Bay Packers. I mean, they've been around for almost 100 years. They have 5 numbers officially retired and then a 6th one that's going to be retired this year. Number 3, Tony Canadio, I think it is. He retired. His number's retired in 1952. Don Hutson retired. His number 14 was retired in 1951. Bart Starr won first 2 Super Bowls, retired in 1973, number 50.
Well deserved.
Ray Nitschke, number 66, retired in 1983, and Reggie White's 92 was retired in 2005, which was the year after he passed away. And it has been announced that this coming season, they'll retire Brett Favre's number 4.
And, so. I mean, I have no problem with that. No problem with that at all. That's interesting. It's a debate that it could go on and on and on, but I definitely would love to hear from some of our listeners, you know, either by email.
Yeah, send an email. Again, extrapoint@placemination.com, or keep the tweets going. Maybe we'll post something on the Facebook page as well. extrapoint@placemination.com. So there you go. So if you have a team and you're wondering whether you have too many or not enough retired numbers, shoot us a tweet, and we'll continue the discussion throughout the year. We'll take a break here on the Extra Point. When we come back, we'll be joined by our man, Grant Hughes from Bleacher Report. We'll talk about the first half of the NBA season, the All-Star break, and get you ready for the second half of the season. Are the Hawks and Warriors on a collision course to the NBA Finals? We'll find out. Grant Hughes, up next.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner, at least we hope.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad,
Do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from PlaceToBeNation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. PlaceToBeNation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on PlaceToBeNation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and look for the great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick. We'll have 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place Simulation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective. And we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
And welcome back to Place of the Nation, episode 34 of the Extra Points. The Doctor, Dr. G. George Polino. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Titans Extra. Kelly and Marty Sleaze back, continuing their exploration of classic tag team wrestling. So you can check that out on the site, just popped up a little while ago. The guys are continuing the Seinfeld rewatch, The Old Man, season 4, episode 18. My PIC, Justin Rosero, Aaron George, Andrew Flanagan, Jordan Duncan. Rewatching one of the greatest sitcoms in the 90s. Chad Campbell has a nice article up, The Dichotomy of a Pro Wrestling Fan on the Internet. Fascinating article. Check it out. Chad put that up today. Andrew Waltman posted an article about the A-List High School Reunion, talking about Sunday night's Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary, which I wanted to talk about, actually, Dr. G, in segment one, but we got caught up with the discussion of retired numbers and A-Rod, and A-Rod ruins everything. So, but if you watched it, I enjoyed it a lot, and we'll clue
yeah,
in
we
our...
did. We actually watched it together. It was pretty good. I enjoyed
yeah.
it.
Yeah, we'll clue in our guest momentarily. See if he, well, I know he was watching something else Sunday night. Maybe he watched it on a DVR. The guys, the movies of the P2B Generation Tournament, the Tatooine region. Now, Dr. G, I got to do this because I do this on the main event when the guys when the guys are on. We go through the bracket. Now, I know you're not a huge. I mean, you like movies, obviously. Some of these probably aren't up your alley, but I do this anyway. So they're doing a movies of the P2B's Movie of the Generation Tournament. Remember, we had all the articles dating back to 1977. The guys were posting their five favorite movies of each year from 1977 to now. Then they put it in a bracket. This is the Tatooine region. I'll give you two movies, Dr. G. Tell me which one you think was better.
Okay.
Star Wars, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Star Wars.
Okay. I know which one you'll pick here. Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, or Forrest Gump?
Forrest Gump.
I know you like Forrest Gump a lot. Jurassic Park or Inception?
I guess Jurassic Park.
Yeah. I was not a big Inception fan.
Yeah.
My brother likes that movie a lot. He loaned me the Blu-ray. I wasn't crazy about it. Groundhog Day, Superman.
Superman. Yeah. I love Superman.
I love Superman too. So that was their that was the bracket. So keep reading and check out the guys' descriptions of their choices in the tournament. The P2B Generation Tournament movies, of course. It's also the final four of our Greatest Song of the 90s tournament. Let me give you the final four songs, Dr. G. I know which one you'll pick. I think my PIC is in the same camp as you are. Here were the final four picks. Ready? It ended up being, on one side, the first semifinal. If the screen will move. Here we go. Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit. I know he's one of your favorite singers of all time. Or REM's Losing My Religion.
Okay, I could see that.
Okay. And the other one, Enter Sandman or Foo Fighters Everlong, which is kind of made like a, kind of like Butler. In the tournament, it's kind of made a run. So vote in the Greatest Song of the 90s Final Four on PlaceBeNation.com.
I have to go and Enter Sandman. What are you talking about?
Of course you are. And, of course, we have a great article. The PlaceBeNation staff, Justin Rosero, Jen Engel, Ben Morse, took a trip back through the six seasons of Parenthood. That's a show your wife likes. Mrs. G likes that show.
Yes.
So I'm gonna clue her in on this article. She'll like it. And last night, speaking of my PIC, Mr. Zero and I, along with Mark Claire, went into the Vintage Vault for Place to Be Podcast Episode 363, WrestleMania 20, a show that I was at Madison Square Garden. So check that out. It's two parts. That's how long the podcast is. So check it out. PlaceBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. All right. The NBA season is half over. The All-Star game was Sunday night at the Garden. That's up in Boston. Which means it's time to bring in our man, BleacherReport.com, senior NBA writer, Mr. Grant Hughes. Grant, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
Observations of, before we get into the, well, let's talk about the All-Star weekend. What were your thoughts on two arenas? Of course, Friday night and Saturday night, they had their festivities at Barclays down in Brooklyn. And, of course, the game was at the Garden. What were your thoughts on that?
No big deal. I think if you got the facilities, you got to use them. They sort of bring different things to the table. Barclays is like this slick new, the architecture is all crazy looking, and it's got this big Oculus thing out in front, and, you know, Brooklyn's ultra hip. But then the Garden has its own, you know, sort of more storied mystique, mm-hmm. I guess, to it. So kind of cool in a couple of ways. I think it made some sense to use both, since it was such a circus anyway, with so much media and everybody descending on the city. Mm.
The highest scoring game in history on Sunday night is the West beat the East 163-158. Russell Westbrook, 41 points. Kind of symbolic for him, right? I mean, he struggled this season. He was battling injuries. Confidence booster for him, right?
Yeah, I mean, not that, you know, if there's a guy that, you know, doesn't have a confidence issue, it's definitely him.
That's
and
true,
it's sort of like coming into, you know... The All-Star game for him, it's like it's like everyone else is in slow motion and he has one speed, or just about everybody else is. I think LeBron really wanted the MVP, and you could see that when he came out and was, you know, being extra aggressive. But for Russ, like, he's just – his switch is on. There's only on and off, and I don't know if I've ever seen off. And when it's on, he's nuts. Like, he's just the most athletic guy out there. He's playing as hard as he possibly can. He's just hunting buckets, taking crazy shots, and, like, that's just who he is. And when you're playing in a game with where nobody's really interested in playing defense or certainly getting hurt, like, you're going to get 41 points. That's what's going to happen. And, you know, in the context of the season for him, that is big, because just like every other year, he's catching heat for, you know, taking bad shots and just sort of basically being him, just kind of a tired narrative. But that's, you know, it was big for him. It was good. I thought it was important.
Observations about the week. I mean, we had you on your debut performance here on Extra Point, which was fantastic. Just some observations of the first half, just in general. Give me two or three, just random observations through the first half of this NBA season.
I think you got to start with how the Warriors and Hawks have kind of set themselves apart in each conference. I think certainly the Hawks were more surprising in ending up where they are. They're, you know, 6.5 games up in the East, and I don't really see, unless you think Cleveland is really going to make a big run, anybody catching them. The other thing that's kind of interesting to me is that really in the last couple of weeks, I think we've seen the playoff picture sort of get shakier than maybe we thought it would be, or at least shakier than it looked, you know, maybe a month ago or two. I think the East, the bottom of the East, you've got five or six teams that could occupy those bottom two spots. That's really interesting. The West, you know, the top seven seem pretty set, but there are three teams that could pick up that eighth spot, and maybe it didn't seem like that was an option. So there's like 30 games or so left, and I think it's a lot less settled than maybe we thought it would be at this point.
Yeah, you know, when we spoke, I would say, what did we speak about, 3 weeks ago maybe?
We were
saying that things seemed to be a little clearer, and all of a sudden now things got jumbled up. And we were wondering, you know, let's give it another month to see how the Hawks do. We were saying before we really say, you know what, this team's really, you know, the real deal. And I think now, after, you know, I guess now 3 weeks later, let's say at this point, I think they are the real deal. Again, we know Cleveland's come on. You know, could they possibly, you know, make a big run now with LeBron? You never know. But I think right now, I think Atlanta's definitely going to be the class of the East for the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think that's right. But here's, I don't know, this is, I feel like this is an unpopular opinion, just because nobody likes to, it's not cool to sort of, you know, do a little quick reality check on the Hawks, because the Hawks are awesome. Everything they represent is good if you're a basketball sort of purist or whatever. Like, they move the ball, they're sort of quote unquote starless, you know, they embrace the system, all that stuff that guys like me that are getting older and want to see, like, you know, old timey basketball played, like, they just aren't on the Warriors level. I mean, just, you know, you can use the conference argument. The West is much stronger than the East, but the Hawks have played West teams pretty well. They beat the Warriors. So if you want to just rely on that, then maybe I'm crazy. But if you look at, like, the margins of victory and the strength of competition, the Warriors are just, like, are way out there. And then you can put a team like Memphis even, or surprisingly even like the Clippers or Portland up there. And you could make the case that statistically they've been more impressive than the Hawks. The Hawks are great. Their conference is soft, and I think we need to make sure we're sort of keeping things in order in our minds when we're talking about them.
Taking a quick look at the Hawks' schedule, they're 28-7 in the East, which means, and they're 43-11. So what's that make them? 15-4 against the West.
Really good. That's really good.
Yeah, that is very good. Let's take a look quickly. They lost to the Spurs by 2 back in November down there. Let's see. I'm looking at good teams, not the Lakers. Nobody cares. I'll throw my own digs at my team later. They beat Houston by 7. They beat Dallas by 3. Beat the Clippers by 3. This was in December. Beat Portland by 8 in January. These were all on the road. Beat the Clipper. Wait, am I looking at the right schedule? Yeah, the Hawks. So they swept the season series from the Clippers. Beat them twice.
Yep.
Won at Portland. Home against Memphis, won by 10. Let's see. As mentioned, they play Golden State right before the break and beat them 124-116 at home. They'll play them again out there on March 18th. They'll play them in Oakland. So they've won convincingly. I mean, their losses, they lost to Toronto. They've lost to San Antonio, Charlotte. That game was in overtime. They have one two-game losing streak so far.
Yeah, that amazing.
Two-game losing streaks. Lost to San Antonio and Charlotte. That was back-to-back. Then they lost to at Cleveland, so LeBron beat them by 33 points in November. And then the Lakers actually beat them. The highlight of the year. As we look through the rest of their season, they got Houston still at home. They do have a West Coast. In March, they have a West Coast trip. Denver, Phoenix, the Lakers, the Kings, Golden State, Oak City, all in a row on the road in mid-March. I wouldn't say that's easy. I wouldn't say it's hard. It's pretty daunting, though. Anyway, West Coast trip's daunting regardless. Another team I want to talk about in the East, it's kind of holding their own. They're sitting at fourth in the East right now, and that's the Wizards. We talked about them when last time you were on. They're sitting at fourth right now. They're 33-21. They're actually a half game ahead. If the playoffs started today, they'd play Cleveland in the first round, and they're a half game ahead of them, so the Wizards would have home court. Can the Wizards keep it up and keep that top four slot?
It's going to be – well, here there are two things to think about, right, with that. One is, who's going to catch them? And, just looking at the standings, like you say, Cleveland – I really like Cleveland to hop over them. They're right there. I mean, mm-hmm. It's neck and neck at percentage points. I don't see Washington falling any further than that, and I don't see anybody above them slipping big time. But kind of quietly, the Wizards in the last couple of weeks leading up to the break were pretty shaky. Mm-hmm. They, I'm just looking now, they've lost six of their last eight going into the break, including twice to Toronto, which is a team that they always play tough, and one of those was an overtime loss. If I had to guess right now, I think the Wizards are going to slip to five, which, could still mean they're going to be a team that wins 46, 47, 48 games, getting close to 50 maybe, which is great for a franchise that really hadn't broken through till last year. But they're I think if I had to guess, they're not going to hang on to that fourth seed.
Well, and their first game back is Friday night at home against Cleveland.
Right.
So feet in the fire right off the bat. Looking at the bottom of the East, the bottom of the playoff teams, Charlotte and Miami, both eight games under. They're at 7-8, and your Nets, Dr. G, have slipped to ninth. What are your thoughts on the Nets and Lionel Hollins? I always thought he was a good coach. Did wonderful things in Memphis. Pretty solid X and O guy, I think. Is it just a lack of talent there? Is it injuries? What's the issue in Brooklyn?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's a talent issue on the roster for sure, and there's a health issue. I mean, their three best quote unquote best players are Brooke Lopez and Deron Williams and Joe Johnson. Those guys are all older. They've all had really Johnson's been pretty healthy, but the other two have had major injury issues recently. I don't know if you can put their 10 games under 500. I don't know if you can put that on Hollins necessarily. But at the same time, I think, he lost that job in Memphis because he's, at least at the time, I think he's sort of changed or grown a little bit since then, was just a really old school coach in a league Charles Barkley talking about analytics, which I think if you asked him to define the word, he wouldn't know what it means. but Lionel Hollins isn't an analytics guy, or he wasn't. And I think – you're not doing yourself any favors if you're going to sort of set yourself up as that's your image, right? I mean, in a league, analytics means more information. And we don't need to go down this road, but it's like if you're opposed to more information or you're afraid of it or you're dismissive of it, like you need to be out of the conversation. It's at that point, like you're clearly just not interested in learning more about something, which it's crazy to me. Take me where you to go where you will with that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Dr. G had you had your nice. You were pimping the net stuff. It's funny you said something. We were earlier in the show. Grant, the doctor and I went up to Springfield to the Basketball Hall of Fame. We're here on the East Coast. We're in Connecticut. If you ever come to this side of the world, I recommend going, man. It's
too cold over there. Sorry.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. I don't,
you know what sucks?
It's not coming.
That's actually a great excuse.
But it was 73 degrees today. I'm not going anywhere.
Screw you. All right, so come in June then.
All right.
Go for the finals.
It's humid, though. I don't know about the humidity.
Oh, my God.
I'll take 33 degrees right now.
I know, no shit. All right. Let's go to the bottom of the East for a minute. Let's talk about the bottom feeders. How about the team that hosted the All-Star game on Sunday?
Oh, gosh.
The biggest crowd they'll fucking have all year. 10-43. They're fairly dreadful. They did a pretty good – they did a pretty smart money thing, though, and they pretty much cast off Amare Stoudemire and that money. He's going to sign with the Mavs in a couple days after he clears waivers because no one's going to take him. What is Phil Jackson – how do I word this? Has Phil Jackson done as much as he can right now with the Knicks? Is he still hamstrung or has he not done enough? Or has he done as much as he could under the circumstances? Give me a grade of Phil Jackson's performance.
Oh, man. And if I can't go incomplete, which is a total cop-out, I can't go incomplete. I think I'm going to – here's the thing, and I'll get to a grade in a second. He started out in a position where it was really hard for them to not re-sign Carmelo Anthony just for a number of reasons. Like, we're the Knicks. We got to have our star, whatever.
Right.
That was a mistake. He's – going to be on the very wrong side of 30 in the latter half of that contract. And he is a good scorer who has had a whole lot of trouble getting out of the first round in the playoffs. I'm not sure if he's your best player. Mm-hmm. Your ceiling is very high.
Right.
And that's about as measured a take as I think I can give on him. I think it's so much has been said and written about him that it's hard to be sort of even handed with him. But I think starting from there, and that was a Jackson call, I'm sure. Like, if you're going to have Jackson installed at the top, he's going to be making that decision to the extent that ownership lets him. Mm-hmm. You're behind the eight ball. You've invested max money in a guy who's not worth max money. And from there, I think you're relying on the sort of Knicks mystique down the line to draw free agents. And that doesn't work. It doesn't work for the Lakers, that's what they're relying on now, and it doesn't work for the Knicks. So Jackson's in a tougher spot than you think. So I'm going to give him – I'll give him like a C+.
Okay.
Because I think he's done what you can do in a spot that's like, what do you want from him? You know, there was no talent on that roster or no like value-priced talent, and he's kind of stripped away some of it. But he's stuck with Melo, and what do you, I just don't think you're going anywhere with Carmelo Anthony as your best player. You're just not.
I agree. Now, what do you think about the? There's a lot of controversy here on the East Coast about him playing in the All-Star game and then now shutting it down or saying he was going to shut it down after the All-Star game for the season.
He didn't play that great either.
No, he looked terrible.
Yeah, I mean, what do you feel about? I mean, do you think the criticism is much deserved, or do you think that he needed to do that for the city? For the All-Star game itself, since New York was the host city, and really he was really the only guy representing New York in the All-Star game.
I don't know. That just all kind of rings phony to me, don't you think? Like, I get it. Like, you want to be the ambassador or whatever that even means. But All-Star Weekend is so big and it's so grand. It's never about any one guy. Like, I didn't feel like the Garden was rooting for Melo to get buckets in that game necessarily. I think they were sort of relieved when he hit his first shot because he had been looking so bad. But I think bigger picture, like, it's a bad look for him to play in an All-Star game and then be talking about, well, we're going to shut it down after the break. Although that's what the Knicks should do. They should shut him down because they need to bottom out. They've got a pick. They need to maximize their odds of it being a good pick. And, you know, he can win you some garbage games down the stretch that might really screw that up. So, you know, he probably shouldn't have played, and he definitely shouldn't play going forward.
I agree. I think, you know, you could be an ambassador in different ways without having to play the game. You know, just be out there if you wanted to be out there in front of it doing, you know, whatever, ads or, doing the interviews or whatever needed to be done. But I don't think he needed to necessarily play the game. And, yeah, it came off kind of being a little phony and in my mind. But, you know, I don't know if this guy's ever going to win, you know, and I don't mean, you know, win with the press here in New York. I think people are 50-50 on him. I think there are a lot of fans or a lot of press that didn't really want them to sign him. And, you know, for the max contract. And I think now, you know, and then they probably feel a little burned after Amari Stoudemire. So I don't know. Phil Jackson has a tough task ahead of him.
Yeah, he really does. I don't envy it at all
right now.
Let's switch. Let's go out west. We'll talk about the Knicks in a couple minutes because we'll get a taste of the draft. Because you posted a great article today about the rookies this season. We know that Golden State's the cream of the crop. I mean, they probably are the most complete team in the league right now. I think Memphis is a solid two. Let me give you these next, five teams, all very close to each other. Portland, Houston, Dallas, the Clippers, and the defending world champion Spurs. Where do you see those five teams when the season's over? Are they 3 through 7? Because that's their order now, 3 through 7. Portland, Houston, Dallas, the Clippers, and the Spurs, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And Phoenix is sitting at 8, a half game ahead of the Thunder and 1.5 ahead of New Orleans. Where do you see those five teams at the end of the season?
I think I got to put the Spurs. They're separated. Those five that you mentioned are separated by two games right now.
Yep, two games.
So it's as close gets at this point in the season. I think the Spurs are going to be at the top of that list just because they haven't had their run yet.
Right.
And a lot of times that coincides with their rodeo trip when they head out on the road for like 7, 8, 9 games or whatever it is. And there's just nothing. I haven't seen anything to convince me that they're that different from the team they were last year. I think it's just been some injuries, which is going to happen when you're as old as they are, and you know, just some bad bounces, whatever. If I'm betting, they're going to be the third best team in the conference, and maybe they push Memphis even. Although I agree with you, Memphis is the clear cut number two. After that, Houston's going to have some trouble without Dwight Howard. He's out for a number of weeks with a knee, and I read an interesting article, and I wish I could remember who wrote it today, about how sort of their on-court performance actually hasn't changed that much without him, but I don't figure that's going to stay the same over a larger sample. You can't just lose Dwight Howard and have it not mean anything. So I kind of like Portland to stick at, I guess, second in that group behind the Spurs. And then, you know, Houston, Dallas, and the Clippers are all kind of similar in that they're really good, but they have a couple of flaws. The Clips are in trouble without Blake Griffin. That's a big deal. He had elbow surgery before the break. He's out for a few weeks. I might even put the Clippers at the bottom of that group, actually, now that I'm looking at it. And I think OKC's going to jump over Phoenix for that 8 spot as well.
Really? Okay. So you don't think the Suns are going to last, are going to have the staying power?
No, I don't. I mean, and this is the thing about the West. It sucks. Like, the Suns are a good team. You could talk me into them being the fourth or fifth seed in the East pretty easily. but it's just the Suns right now, they're kind of one of the teams that's got some stuff up in the air at the trade deadline. They may have to make a move sort of out of panic almost to clear up some backcourt space and keep Goran Dragic happy. And they just feel, you know, even if you just go by the record, they're 5.5 games behind the 7th spot. They're not in that class above them. And if you're going to give me Durant and Westbrook healthy for the rest of the year, they're making up a half game on the Suns. I mean, there's no question in my mind.
Now, you were talking about the Spurs, and they're in the midst right now, actually, of a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 game road trip.
Yep, that's it.
That got broken off. They won two of the first three last Sunday, a 5-point loss at Toronto. Then they beat the Pacers by 2 and the Pistons by 17. So they beat the Pistons 104-87 before the break. Here is the rest of the road trip starting Thursday night. At the Clippers, at the Warriors, at the Jazz, at the Blazers, at the Kings, at the Suns. I think that's your run that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I hadn't looked specifically at the schedule. That's going to be a tough one. But I think they're going to make it. I think it's just I mean, how many years do we have to go through sort of, well, I don't know, let's wring our hands about the Spurs and then watch them end up with 50-whatever wins and then make a deep playoff run? It's just really hard for me. Maybe it's habit. I don't know. It's hard for me to get off of the habit of just waiting for the Spurs to pounce and then looking back and thinking, like, why the hell did I ever think for a second that this wasn't going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Any trades? Any teams going to make moves? The deadline is next
Thursday.
This Thursday, yeah.
Yep.
I saw something on your on Bleacher today about maybe Joe Johnson going to New Orleans, possibly. Maybe involving Brandon Jennings, and Johnson will go to Detroit. Any bites you think about teams making last second moves before Thursday?
Yeah, man, I think the first thing you got to do these next like 36 to 48 hours is just like anytime you hear something, be immediately skeptical, because now is like just the eye of the storm of when agents and when teams are floating stuff. Like, I would throw that in there, the Johnson rumor. Watch him get traded in 20 minutes, but you know, just trying to raise value, trying to drum up offers, things like that. Like, this is right now the crazy time, basically. That said, I think Phoenix is going to do something, and I don't think they want to. But that's because Dragic is going to be a free agent, and they've got three guys who play point guard, and they're worried about losing Dragic for nothing. So that means they may think about moving him, which has been in the news a little bit, or they may think about moving Isaiah Thomas, who has a pretty team-friendly contract and would be kind of ashamed to lose him. But if it means you keep Dragic, then I think you do that. So they're involved. I think the Nets, until that deadline passes, we have to assume Brook Lopez is still going to be talked about. There have been way too many rumors going on for way too long for that to not, you know, at least come really close or have something happen. But other than that, you know, those have been the kind of the big stories leading up. I do think, though, every year we get something that happens that some smart team that doesn't leak things gets involved in and does that surprises everybody. So I think you can probably count on one or two things happening that we haven't heard a peep about up until it actually goes final.
Mm-hmm. You posted an article today on bleachreport.com, and check it out because it's awesome, about Andrew Wiggins and his front running for Rookie of the Year. What other rookies have stood out for you so far this year?
Yeah, Wiggins has stood out above and beyond everybody. And really, like, it's not close. He's just so much further along in so many different areas of the game than anybody I think thought he would be. And the best thing about him is, like, he's on a terrible team where it's really easy to get your numbers, because especially if you're him, like, you're gonna get all the minutes you want and all the shots you want. But he's been pretty efficient, relatively speaking. He's shot the three pretty well, which has been surprising for, you know, measured against what we thought he was going to be coming out of college.
Right.
Other than him, Nerlens Noel, I think, has probably been the second best rookie so far, the forward / center on the Sixers. Really good defensive player, has good hands, good instincts, moves really well for a big guy. I don't know if he's ever going to be an offensive factor, but he kind of, like, you watch a guy and it's like, oh, that guy looks like a basketball player. Like, that's not a guy that's been, like, that's mechanical and has been taught to do the things he's doing. Like, he's instinctive and he's quick and covers a lot of ground. So I like him a lot. Probably the third best guy is Elfrid Payton, the Magic's point guard. He can't shoot at all. Like, I don't know if it's ever going to happen offensively as far as shooting the ball for him. 19% on threes this year, which is like, and right around 56% from the free throw line, which, like, this is your point guard. That's not good. Mm. But awesome ball handler, kind of like I was talking about with Noel, like, just has phenomenal instincts, gets to his spots, distributes, is a real point guard in the sense of, like, he wants to set guys up and he understands how to do that.
Right.
I like him a lot. I think those are probably my clear top three this year. And pretty impressive, because Noel was last year's draft but sat out with injury, and Payton was, I think, the 10th or 12th pick this year. So kind of a good mix, actually, alongside Wiggins, who was the top pick.
Mm. All right. One more current question, and then we're going to get a little nostalgic, and then we'll let you go. if right now your final four, if you had to pick right now as we start the second half, your Eastern Conference Finals and your Western Conference Finals, what are they?
In the West, I think it's going to be Golden State and Memphis, which means I am saying that the Spurs get knocked off sometime before the conference finals, which hurts to say, but I think that happens. And then in the East, I think Cleveland makes it, and I think Atlanta's there too. The other one you'd throw in would be Chicago, but I don't know, a little inconsistent, always going to be banged up. I think it's Cleveland and Atlanta in the East.
Okay. All right. Before we let you go, today is the Air's birthday.
Yes.
We saw plenty of his jersey all over that building in Springfield. Oh, yeah. and in the gift shop. Do you have a defining, as a fan, Grant, do you have a defining Michael Jordan moment that will always stick out for you?
Oh, that's a great question. Man, that's a tough question.
Yeah, that is a tough one.
Well, I'm going to be asking you too, Dr. G. So mine's probably the flu game.
I was going to say the flu game. That's the one where if I ever catch footage of that, I watch until it's over, number one, on TV or whatever. And it gives me the most, like, it takes me back to when, what was that, 96, 97.
97, game five, against the Spurs. Yep. I mean, against the Jazz.
Yeah, 97. So I'm like 14, I think. 15. And it just takes me back to being like, this guy is not to that point when you're a kid, when basketball players are still like gods to you. Right. And just thinking like, this guy is not a human. Like, this is something other. This is something like more than a game that I'm watching. And he is more than an athlete. And you know, as silly as that is now, you get a little older. It's just like that resonates and still gives me chills when I see it. I think that's probably what I would have to throw out there.
Yeah, for those that may not know, the flu game was a game. I want to make sure I get this right.
Let's think it's game five.
I think it's game five too. Game five of the 1997 NBA Finals. The series was tied at two. Game five at the Delta Center, because I think the Jazz actually had the home court in that game, if I remember correctly. And Michael, I've played sick. It sucks. and I am not Michael by any stretch of the imagination. And he dropped, Jesus, 39, I think?
Yeah, I had this 38 or 39 or something like that.
Yeah,
played a zillion minutes, was just dying out there. You could see it. Like, he just, oh.
Let's see. Here we go. This series against the Jazz featured two of the more memorable clutch moments of Jordan's career. He won game one for the Bulls with a buzzer beater jumper. Game five, with the series tied at two, Jordan played despite being feverish and dehydrated from a stomach virus. In what is known as the flu game, he scored 38 points, including the deciding game three, deciding three pointer with 25 seconds left. The Bulls won 90-88. They won game six at the United Center for their fifth championship, and he was the MVP award. Big shock. I like the flu game. Do you have any moments stick out for you, Dr. G, about Michael?
You know, that's funny because that's definitely, you know, one of them. I guess, you know, to me, I wouldn't say it's a specific game. It's just how he always tortured the Knicks.
Well, they'll always remember the double nickel, which was the 55 he scored when he came back in 95 against a pretty damn good Knicks team. That's for sure.
I mean, just because I guess living in this area and, you know, knowing Knicks fans and just seeing the heartbreak for them every just he always knew how to just crush Knicks fans.
Yes. And, you know, six NBA championships, not a great executive. Sometimes you need to find your limits. And the Hornets, I mean, he does have Kemba Walker, who's an awesome player, but not exactly. It's not as easy when you're trying to make other people do it as when you can do it yourself.
Right. Yeah, that's been a big issue. Although the Hornets, you know, they made the playoffs last year.
They're in it this year. They're in it at the moment.
They seem to be coming on a little bit better this year after a horrible start, which brought out all the MJ sucks as a executive narratives again. But, you know, yeah, let's pretend he only ever played.
I think also to it, you think about when he defeated Dominique Wilkins in the 1988 dunk contest.
Yep.
You know, that's when he became, you know, his airness, if you want to say, you know, call it that. that was kind of like a defining moment for him, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess those are the kind of things that I think about, you know, when I think of him. Obviously, the flu game, which I mean, that goes without saying.
Mm. Of all of his six championships, I'd have to say the one I enjoyed the most, just entertainment wise, was probably '93. Being a Laker fan, it was cool seeing him face Magic, but in 91, Magic was clearly, well, we all know what was going on in his body at the time, what was floating around in his system, but Magic was not Magic. If 91 Michael was facing 85 Magic, oh, we'd have a much more sexier final. I remember 92, I was a big, I never hated the Bulls. I mean, I'm a Western Conference guy by nature, but I never hated the Bulls. I never really hated them.
I mean, unless you're a Pistons fan or I guess even a Knicks fan, it's hard to hate the Bulls, especially just watching, you know, because to tie into this year, the Warriors right now are, you know, statistically the team that they get compared to, because there aren't any comparisons, are the 95-96 Bulls that won 72 games.
Mm-hmm.
And watching those teams just crush people, just like by huge margins, and just be dominant on both ends. Like, you can't hate that. It's just too good. I've never understood the idea of I hate this team. You know, even I just appreciate how incredibly good they are. Like, that's how do you not like that?
Yeah, exactly. That 93 final was amazing, because I thought, I mean, Barkley, that might have been, and we were in school, Dr. G, we were in college, and you were a Barkley guy. Like,
yeah, I wanted him to win that so bad.
Yeah, that was a great series.
And
he didn't even win it. It was John Paxson, Notre Dame guy, with the shot. I always felt bad for the Sonics in 96. They were a good basketball team.
Yeah.
And they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And don't forget, they were down 3-0 and then won the next two. They actually stole game five in Chicago.
Yeah, that team, that was a sneaky, really good team. Like, Kemp and Payton basically at the height of their powers. They just had like the perfect role guys too, because they had Hersey Hawkins that could shoot a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and like George Karl was sort of, you know, really had, I don't know if he's ever done a better job than when he was there. They had a lot going for him.
Yeah. And I definitely was rooting for the Bulls last two, cause I, being a Laker fan, I despise Karl Malone. So I was rooting for Michael in those last two.
Very passionate. Tonight.
I am very passionate about that. Grant, thank you very much as always. Always a pleasure.
You bet.
We'll have you back on in about a month or so. We'll let the season let the second half marinate a little bit, and we'll talk about a couple things. We'll talk about the season as it's going on, and I want to talk more with you about the draft and the pathetic Knicks, and see if they still have, because right now they would have the most ping pong balls with that unbelievably putrid 10-43 record. So they would obviously have the most ping pong balls. I think the Lakers would have like the third most. And we'll talk about Okafor at Duke, and you know, some of these other guys, and see where the chips fall where they may. Grant Hughes with BleacherReport.com. Check his stuff out. He's got a great article up right now about Andrew Wiggins and his all-star stuff from the weekend. Grant, thank you.
You bet.
Dr. G, thank you. That's it for this edition of The Extra Point. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Obviously, we're back to every other week. And we'll see if I can get TJ McAloon on and talk a little NHL hockey as we get through the second half of their season. Islanders and Rangers played a crazy game last night out on the island. Bruins are playing terrible. And we'll talk about some other teams as well. And don't forget, as mentioned, later on in March, we will have our second annual MLB preview. Joel Barnhart will join us. We'll talk about everything Major League Baseball for 2015. Can the Giants repeat? Oh, yeah, me too. I can't believe I'm actually, because both my spring teams suck. So I'm actually looking forward to the Mets, which is weird. You're a Giants fan, right, Grant?
Yep, that's correct. Although it's an odd year, so I'm...
they'll finish fourth. Do you think they're good enough to win back-to-back right now?
No way. No. there's no way. If they finish third in the division, I'll be pretty surprised.
Yeah. Tell us, though. I mean, I'm sure you've been there. AT&T Park looks like an unbelievable place to watch a game.
Oh, it's the best. Huge amount of bias coming in. But, like, you just can't, especially if it's an early start and you get there and you get the sunset and you get just the boats in the water and all that stuff. If it's a warm August or September, you can't beat it. It's perfect.
Yeah, definitely a place I want to check out. All right, for Dr. G and for Grant Hughes, I'm Scott Piscola. You have kicked the extra point, even though the season's over. You've hit the three because Melo hit none. Have a great couple weeks.
See you. You gave me something I understand.